Welcome in, everybody. It is Inside the Gamecocks, the show. We are live from the mountains to the sea in the great state of South Carolina, coast to coast, nationwide, and worldwide via the Chief Sports Network app. I am Phil Mad Dog Mullinax, cutting through the orange fog of the upstate of South Carolina. He is, of course, J.C. Sherbert, my co-host. And we are joined now, just to, you know, that way we're not a couple of clowns on the show all the time. We're bringing in the Morgs, the Golden Tones. Mike
Morgs.
That's right.
Well, no, not at all. I expect pure sophomore behavior for the next 60 minutes, and I'm all about it.
Oh, yeah.
Help me out to disappoint.
I'm all about it. Man, I'm excited just from a standpoint. You know, we did the podcast today, which is available on I think it's still available on the Chief app. I don't know.
It is.
Do we still promote this thing anymore? I don't know what we're doing.
It is. Yeah, definitely.
It is. Okay. It is. There was a time we promoted it and like messages.
Right now, the entire Chief podcast apparatus is going to the On3 platform.
Sweet.
And we hit a snag last night that has, so we're in podcast purgatory right now.
Oh gosh.
So it's available. Like what Phil's got a link, but in a couple of days, so it's available on the platform that we put it on, but like Apple and Spotify, which are 95% of the people get it.
Yeah.
For some reason, there's been a disconnect with getting it filtered back out there. Those of you that are out there that listen to our podcast, I do want to let you know, you don't have to do anything. I know when we left 24/7, we had to restart everything.
Right.
And give you the new link. There's no new link. It's on the back end. And as of 8 o'clock last night, Eastern time, the folks at On3 were working on it. And I do appreciate that, because at the old place, I could never get an answer about podcast at all. So that's 6 months, you know. Mike, we tried to change the logo how many times,
and it was
way awful. So they're
all excited about that. On3 obviously does a great job with everything these days. So, of course, still on YouTube and
if the problem is not resolved by 4 o'clock today, I will push them out on all the socials for both JC and Morgan and the shows today. That way we can at least keep everybody who just likes to listen, which we completely understand if that's how you do it. We got you.
Awesome. Well, you know, Lugs brought it today. Well, and I say I'm excited because it's 100 days. 100 days can go very fast. 100 days till football. So we did 99% college football talk, which I'm all about that. We did touch on what's going on with LSU basketball, because that's more than just LSU basketball. Will Wade and Lane Kiffin, I'm convinced, are they just call each other up every night and go, what else can we do to piss off everybody that loves college athletics? I don't know. Why don't we get a bunch of semi-pros? And that's a good one. Yeah, do that. Why don't we claim that the state that we sold kids on for several years is just a bunch of racist people and we're great people over here? Yeah, let's do that. it's amazing, but
call up, look, Coach O and get him back to the party.
Coach O back there.
Yeah. I'm coming home.
But for those that don't know, like, you know, we've talked about this in terms of Carolina. Carolina's probably going to spend the last couple of Scullys on foreign kids. And that has become a big, big thing now, because those guys play a level of basketball that's a little bit more, dare I say, structured than a lot of these AAU tournaments, right? So coaches love these guys, because once you get them on campus, first off, every game they play overseas, they actually give a crap about winning, and they're coached up right, and the knock used to be, well, they're fundamentally strong, but they're just not athletic enough. Yeah, they're pretty athletic too. Watch some of these guys. A lot of them are in the NBA right now. They're not lacking athletic. They can jump and they can run, and they're just damn good players. So everybody was like, what's Will Wade going to do? The clock is ticking and all the top recruits are out. He said, hold my beer. And I'm basically going to take what Nate Oates did and put it on steroids and recruit a bunch of guys that were drafted by the NBA, that played in the G League, that made a lot of money overseas, and I'm just going to put them all on a college roster when the average age will be, I don't know, 23 and a half, and let's see how we do. It's a very interesting way of doing it. I'm fascinated how it all is going to go.
If I RJ really Lewis is ruled eligible, I remember that kid played for Frank Martin at UMass, and then Pitino swiped him and took him to St. He's a heck of a player, St. Yeah. John's. Just probably not an NBA guy. And see, this is an unintended consequence, guys, of because it used to be if you didn't go to the NBA, you want to keep playing basketball, you play in the G League, or you could go to overseas, not just Europe, but Israel, Turkey, China. Japan and you, Australia, and you could play basketball. Basketball is an international game. But now, because for lack of a better term, naive college programs are spending more on basketball players per player than the guys have no chance to be pros. Why not come back and make your money? You're much better than this slappy that got $2 million. That's life-changing money. Why not take a risk with the courts? Mm-hmm. And so that's where the coaches and the people out there making the decisions have jumped the shark in basketball. There's just no way some of these guys on any planet are truly worth it. Now, the market does set the value. I'm a capitalist, and I understand all that. But all it takes is, you know, let the four schools that overpaid last year that didn't do squat do it. And everybody else kind of agree, hey, you're not paying that. But no, everybody went nuts this year. Because they panicked. People like Mick Cronin don't need to be coaching in this era. Right. He spends all year griping about the money. And then afterward, he says, well, I need $2-5 million more dollars. And then he's like, I'm just going to go spend whatever I can. Yeah, I mean, and I'm like, so you can come back and bitch all year next year and call out reporters and make it to the second round, Mick? I mean, you're at UCLA. I mean, it's one of the best jobs in the country. You probably should be doing a little better and stop complaining. I mean, it's unbelievable, basketball, to me. Football has gotten a little out of control. But basketball this year, I mean, it was a little high. It's a little high last year. This year?
It's drunk.
It is. I mean, look, and I'm all for these guys getting paid, but come on, man.
Well, I mean, you're talking now, so the SEC, like I think the thought was the average program's going to spend around 12. That is quickly, the pendulum is moving closer to 15. So you're just, for a lot of programs, you're constantly playing catch up.
And you have individual guys making four. And look, Carolina's paid a lot to some of these guys. Mm-hmm. You know, this kid from overseas, the one of them is actually really good. And like a really, like over there, they like him.
Yeah.
And so they're gonna spend. It's not the overall budget to me. It's more of the some of these numbers on some of these guys. I'm like, really? For that guy? Are these coaches just lazy and can't go find somebody comparable for cheaper?
It's the quick sugar fix. Do I want to develop the 18-year-old and hope that he turns into something? And look, the top 20 or 30 recruits, that hasn't changed. If you can get one of those, you grab them, right? I mean, we just saw one of the best freshman classes in the history of basketball. And if you watch the NBA draft in June, you're going to see name after name after name after name go. It was a record class. But most programs don't get those, right? I mean, Carolina, Georgia, Mississippi State. Like, these programs don't get typically the top 30 recruits, unless maybe they're right in their backyard. And even then, it's tough. So what coaches are doing is they're pivoting, saying, okay, if I can't get one of those, that I'm just going to go old. And old used to be the guy that played 4 years at McNeese. And then you got him as a grad transfer and you're like, okay, this dude's ready to ball. And that still exists. But now you're adding the Euros. And again, coaches, I think I told this story on the first iteration of ITG, that multiple times I have been somewhere where I'm staying in the same hotel as one of the teams that I'm covering. And very often you're limited on what you can do. I go to a hotel bar, and guess who I run into? It's some guy who like speaks French. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. What is a guy that speaks French doing in Starkville? Well, that guy who speaks French is not there for the barbecue. He is an agent that represents a bunch of really talented French players and is brokering them. All right, how much are you willing to pay to get my Frenchman? How much are you willing to pay? They're all over. I can't go anywhere without seeing these guys. And that's all they do. This used to be considered the illegal bag men. Even in baseball, we couldn't call them agents. We had to call them, you couldn't have an agent, but you could have something. It was a different, it was a more like mundane title. But really, they were agents. And that's what these guys are. And they're just out there farming out players to the highest bidders. And most coaches, if you can't get the elite of the elite high school kids, if you want to be in the game, you've got to get yourself involved in that. And that's clearly what Lamont Paris and Carolina is doing now. Will Wade is taking it to a whole other level. But there's foreign players on almost every SEC team. This is not like no one's reinventing the wheel on their own.
Illinois did it last year and went to the Final Four.
Oh, well, they've got – so I've had Brad Underwood, who was once a Frank Martin assistant for a year, and who knows where the program would have been if you had Brad Underwood. Brad Underwood has a guy on his staff. I had a great conversation with him. He speaks like 6-7 languages.
Right.
And he knows everybody. And so he can, you know, if Borat becomes a great ball player in Kazakhstan, he will speak the language and get that kid to come to Champaign-Urbana. It's an invaluable to have that guy. You're right. That's a great example. Illinois is not nearly as good as they've been without that element of their recruiting. So it's a thing. It's an absolute thing. I don't know if football will ever have a version of that. We were talking about that this morning, but because there's not a ton of football players that are balling in Europe. You know, you've got the, of course, Carolina got a sample of a guy that's just raw as hell, but he's a freakish athlete. So you give it a shot, right?
Yeah. There's a guy that does it. And he's like one of the basketball guys, what I was told, that handles kind of that Eastern European down to Turkey ish. He's Turkish. They call him the Turk
182. Turk,
right. You know, it's like, wow. Somebody, people don't understand this because we're in a football market basically in South Carolina and the SEC. But as shady as everybody thinks football recruiting has been through the years, it is nothing compared to basketball. Mm-hmm. Around 97-ish, 8-ish, when the AAU thing came, I mean, that, some of the stuff some of the basketball assistants have done at different schools during the years, I wouldn't tell my mother about. I mean, to get players. I mean, it's just now you have somebody named the Turk, and everybody's saying the Turk is the easiest agent to deal with.
Right. It's simple math, though, right? So, like all the premier quarterbacks, you know, it just goes up every year. 1 million, 2 million, 3 million. If you want a quality quarterback, you're spending millions. And we've got some guys that are making five. But outside of that, if you just spent a bunch of money on a middle linebacker, it's hard to really gauge how much of an impact. Like if you're a 4-win team, how much of an impact is he going to make you win 9? Probably not. It's just he's one guy in a 22 depth chart. But in basketball, you only play 5 guys. So it's an easier calculus to get return on your investment. If I get that dude, I am going to instantly become a much better basketball team. So that's why the money has gotten so out of hand. Whereas in football, it's like, you know, if we miss on that middle linebacker, that's okay. We'll get the left tackle and he might win us more games. But in basketball, it's just so easy to build a roster that you feel like, oh, yeah, now I'm a tournament team. And that's what they're doing.
Yeah, one or two guys can make all the difference in basketball. Mm-hmm. And that's true and all that. I'm shocked that I still don't think in football I understand, like, so if you're a sixth round draft pick or something like that and you're real valuable in college, you can come back and make more money than you would by going pro in a lot of instances, depending on your position, mm-hmm. Especially quarterback. But if you're actually a pro football player, you're not making what you're making up there down in college. It just doesn't happen. Even the initial contracts at most positions. What gets me in basketball is these guys are making more than anybody else except NBA dudes. And the salaries in the NBA, I'll never forget. This is about 10 years ago. It's probably gone up or maybe down. I don't know. Because they collectively bargain. Meta Ward World Peace, who used to be called Ron Artest. He was the 13th guy on the – or the 12th guy, however many people they have on the roster. Last guy on the Lakers bench. Made $14 million.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
$14 million. To be, I mean, he's a practice player. And he's old. Once was great. Not anymore. But so if Meta World Peace is getting that much – the money in basketball has always been a little high. But, you know, the shadiness – the thing about the Turk shocked me because – you got a figure named the Turk that basically is like the kingpin, you know, gatekeeper for all the European kids, kind of maybe east of Germany or whatever, and then south, Greece, all that good stuff. And everybody's talking about what a pleasure he is to deal with. And I'm like, well, what the hell is going on over here? If a Turk is above board, right?
Here we are, the new normal.
Now, you mentioned football. They do have a guy who's actually a pretty good guy. His name's Brandon Collier. I think he played college football, and he's worked hard going to Europe and being an ambassador for the sport and in football. They are raw, but Carolina now has two from Europe. Justin Uncle Ronquo from Germany.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Who's going to be pretty good. Who Nick Saban,
I like him.
Took mm-hmm. him out of out of high school, you know. If Nick Saban likes him, I like him. And then Neff Jiwa, who is from Ireland and a rugby player who's 6'7", 295 pounds. I'd hate to play rugby against that joker. Catch an elbow from him.
Dude.
Oh, yeah.
In Ireland. Ads,
right? Yeah, right.
And that, there's a lot of rugby kids now. Florida State signed, I can't pronounce his name, Nicole Heppy. JC, I don't know if you heard of him. A massive 6'7" offensive tackle from New Zealand who grew up playing rugby.
Now, New Zealand may be a different story, too, because they've got they there's really good football players in the South Pacific, in the islands,
Samoans. Oh, yeah, man.
And some of that kind of bleeds into New Zealand a little bit. But, I mean, hey, Australia, have you ever been up late on ESPN and watched Australian rules football?
Used to love it.
That's crazy.
Used to love it.
I'd go take as many. I'd with 105 scholarships, I would go recruit 5 Australian rules football players. It says we're taking pros anyway. Go take them out of the pro leagues. And I'd teach them to do nothing but kick off coverage and special teams.
I would take one of those, and I would take a Samoan. I know, like
– yes.
I had Penn State. They had the kid, the offensive guard, who went first round of the Ravens, and he's Samoan. And I was asking Brian Baldinger, who covers the draft for NFL Network, I said, who's your favorite pick in the first round? He said, him. And he said, you watch these Samoans, they give you everything on every play. You never have an issue with them. They won't embarrass you. They won't be a pain in the ass. Their culture is so attractive to coaches. So if they can play some ball, and God knows there's no shortage of Samoans and Polynesians that are playing high-level college and NFL football, if they can play, you get everything you want intangible-wise out of those guys.
One of the most awesome things I did in my career when I worked for ESPN, they sent me out to the All-Poly camp in Salt Lake City.
Oh, that's awesome.
First of all, Salt Lake City in the summer is pretty cool.
Beautiful.
73 degrees. Oh. And I got there's a picture of me on my Facebook where I'm at Rice-Eccles Stadium. That's when I went to Rice-Eccles Stadium. I was a young man at the time. This is like 09-ish, I think. And so went to All-Poly Camp. I met Kalani Sitake and Kyle Whittingham there.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the whoever was at UNLV at the time, you know, a lot of those coaches, you know, were there. And what they do, they fly in, and then there's a large, you know, Pacific Islander community in Salt Lake City, as it is. And so they talked about it. So I sat there and watched the drills and stuff. There's some offensive line, defensive line. They're built for that, you know, and they've got light feet. They're tough. All the things you said. But then they started talking about what you're talking about, the culture. And it's interesting because, you know, football is an American sport, obviously. And Samoa is an American territory. I mean, it's a territory of the United States. But that culture, more so than, you know, probably more so than the Hawaiian culture, which also embraces football, has really embraced football. You know, they're like, we were built for this. And frankly, they are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not, they're not all big people, but there's some big people, you know, and they can move around.
Mm-hmm.
They're athletic. And so it's like, we can play this game. And it was just so, I mean, I don't know, it was moving because it's like, you just kind of see the power of the game, so to speak, and how it can bring like a whole community of people together. That maybe we don't think, you know, we always, you know, it's easy to say, well, local high school football in the South or your college team or Auburn or Alabama or Clemson in South Carolina, those are communities. But we don't always think about that overseas group that flies over the Pacific Ocean to go to a camp in Salt Lake City. And the, you know, coaches like Kalani Sitake that have come out of that community and kind of blessed the game.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting. That's very interesting. I do think the European part of it, as coaching staffs continue to look for any edge they can, I think the rugby path may work. I mean, rugby's kind of similar. It's not like a soccer. Of course, Justin Okoronkwo was a soccer player, and he did gymnastics, which just those two things probably would cause me to pass. But here was the kicker. He played lacrosse. That's a pretty physical game too.
Mm.
That's insanity. That's like hockey on grass. So anyway,
I think if you watch the NFL draft now, once you get past the first round, when sickos like me keep watching 2 through 7, what they have done over the last, I don't know, 5 years, every round from like the third on, they have international people go to the podium. Or they actually, sometimes they go to the podium, but most of the time what they do is they're like zoomed in from whatever country they happen to live in, and they read the pick, and they're decked out in Rams gear, Titans gear, Dolphins gear. They're already fans of the NFL. They're fans of pro football. And it's obvious what Goodell and these guys are doing. And they're doing it because you mentioned how stupid the NBA money is. Well, so much of that is coming from China. It's coming from Argentina. It's coming from Greece. The NFL has never had that before, but that is starting to come through. And if that happens, more and more of the best athletes in those countries might actually say, you know what, soccer is cool, but I'm going to try this tackle football thing.
It's not everybody's built for soccer. I mean, right? What are the Scandinavians going to do? They're too big. Some of them are too big to play ice hockey.
It's not Scottish. It's crap.
It's Scots. I mean, what's Leif Erikson ain't going to just roll out there and kick a soccer ball, man. And probably too tall to play hockey. He'd be a hell of an offensive tackle, though.
Oh, yeah.
Leif Erikson. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Up there. Anyway, Ben says Tonga loves American football, too. Yeah, Ben, I didn't mean to just classify everything as Samoa. That was kind of dumb. It was all Polynesia, south of the South Pacific, Micronesia, all the way over to New Zealand.
Remember the Tonga kid, Jimmy Superfly Snuka's understudy? Wrestling.
One of these days when I, number one, have the resources to do it, number two, get the time off to do it, I want to go to like Fiji or someplace like that with the wife. I've always been fascinated by that. Like the water's so clear and
yeah,
it's just laid back and stuff. And heck, it's halfway to Thailand, so we can just stop over and just there keep going.
Right? Yeah. I can't think of a more happy scene than seeing you in a coach seat on a 15-hour flight.
Oh, I'm not flying coach.
Well, you're gonna open up a lot of money for a first class ticket on those flights.
If I can't do it right, I'm not doing it.
You might as well just put a down payment on a new house if you're gonna get first class to that area of the world.
It's crazy.
It's ridiculous. Sean asked, I'm gonna squirrel here to try and fit into the clown circle. He asked, is there a possible way to get a salary cap to have some sort of regulation without making them employees? The early returns on that, Sean, are no, because they've tried everything to supposedly cap stuff. And basically the cap, the $20.5 million, that's the floor. That's what you need to pay to even try and compete. And nobody is spending less than that in Power Four athletics. But most of the programs are spending a hell of a lot more, And until you have an actual collective bargaining agreement, I just don't see any type of hard cap going down on this.
Or a law or something. We're not even getting in there. But you're right. I maybe was a little Pollyannish about the CSC because I thought the schools would actually be like, hey, we signed on to this, so we should all adhere to it. Heck no.
No. Gentlemen's agreement.
Yeah. Uh-uh. Nobody's doing any. I mean, dude, football alone at most SEC schools next year is almost twice that amount.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Nice. And I'm usually Mr. Don't Overpay for players. Mm-hmm. And honestly, with the way most schools have broke it down, I don't think a lot of these guys are really even overpaid. There's not, like you said earlier, the quarterbacks are the ones making a lot of money, and you may have a proven like edge or wide receiver. You know, somebody's really proven to keep them from going in the portal. They get money, but you know, there's just a few outliers of schools going and paying freshmen that much. That should not happen. It does, unfortunately. And based on the early returns, none of those guys are worth the crap. So a lot of waste there. But even at that total amount, you know, I'm like, well, it makes sense with the amount you're given in football because there's so many players. But you know, basketball is the one that got me. But, you know, you're right. The CSC has been a disaster. It's been, you know, they made a mistake by, I think, trying to get use it as a method to backdoor NCAA rules, which they could no longer enforce.
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing things like, well, you can't use Learfield to do this because it's this, this, and this. Oh, Learfield's anything that's a private company doing it, or even a publicly traded company, another entity, you can't keep that from happening. You know, the intent of this was to keep boosters from writing checks to give to players, right? You know, wink, wink, nod, nod, go generate it on your own and it's fine. And so to sit there and try to stop stuff like that, they're just trying to put the toothpaste back in the tube, and you can't have any enforcement that way because they're all going to laugh at you. Mm-hmm. Like Adam Sandler. They're all going to laugh at you. All right, Mike, get us out of here for a break.
That's a great CD, by the way. I used to have that. Right. There's a lot of stuff I want to quote from that, but I can't do it. It's a family show.
Anyway,
I got a snake, man.
I got a
slithering this way and that.
Slithering. Did not expect that today.
So good. The buffoon. The buffoon.
Buffoon, man. Oh, man.
I'm wasted, buddy. Troy Branham. Seldom wasted. Always saving people money on their mortgage. Always helping out. You got any questions? A lot of times people will call. They'll have some questions. Doesn't mean you're going to do business with him. It might not be the right time. He'll be straight up with you. He gives it to you straight. And if you're going into a new mortgage or a refi, business loan, construction loan, residential, guy's been doing it for 30 years, been doing it right. The official mortgage lender of Chief and ITG and Clowns and everybody. 803-238 011-803-2380-111. ggmortgage.com is also the website. Tell them you heard about it right here.
Welcome back, everybody. Inside the Gamecocks, the show rolling on here. We got special guest Mike Morgan in here with the Clowns. I had an interesting discussion. So you brought up, like, I didn't realize, JC, that there was a contingent of Polynesians or South Pacific, you know, natives, if you will, in Salt Lake City in Utah. How does that happen? Like, because I know
Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day
Saints. Is it all right? That's what I think. Because I realized that that's one of the big draws for Notre Dame from overseas is the Catholic Church connection. But yeah, it was, you know, okay. So the Mormon Church is what brings them there. I don't know. I did remember that Kalani Sitake's team last year at BYU performed very well and had a lot of Native Islanders.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, yeah, they do. And I remember when I went out to Pullman, Washington, gosh, summer of 13, I believe. It's the one time I've seen a Cubs game, Phil, because they were playing the Mariners. I think Justin Smoke was playing for the Cubs at the time. But we went there, and then we drove out to Washington State. Mike Leach wasn't there. He was in Key West. But we toured their facilities, met with their staff, and their whole entire defensive line recruiting board was almost all for like play. They played in Guam or Samoa or Tonga. Like they weren't like transplant. They didn't live in America. They were like flying down there. A lot of people don't know this. The Pacific Northwest is some of the islands, it's actually a little closer than LA because you're kind of just going down at an angle, crazy enough. But and they were like, yeah, we love those guys. And sure enough, they had a really good defensive line. That's back when Alex Grinch was the D coordinator there the next year. So that was interesting. But yeah, it's something else. So we talked about this at the end of the first hour. Rob Vaughn.
Yeah.
And it's funny you brought him up because I was having a conversation with somebody yesterday and randomly brought him up because there are some names, from what I've been told, and who knows, it may be that, you know, people try to throw you off the trail or whatever, that there are some names out there. Two things we're told. There are some names out there that have not been publicly reported. And number two, South Carolina is aiming big. And like you mentioned, and I see this too, there's not, like, unless Tony Vitello left the San Francisco Giants to come back to college, which I think will happen sooner rather than later, probably not just this year, but maybe he pulls a Bobby Petrino, who knows? There's not that one guy that I go, yes, do it. I mean, even Schnall and Fitzgerald, you can kind of weigh the pros and cons. And I don't know why that is. I think we're at the point where there's a lot of great coaches that are kind of toward the end of their careers, and then a lot of young up-and-comers. One of those up-and-comers, though, I believe, is Rob Vaughn. Now, yeah. He won at Maryland, but the guy before him, Sizek, I think that's how you pronounce it, he won, and he got the Virginia Tech job. He's been at Virginia Tech for a while. The guy before him was Eric Backich, who's now at Clemson at Maryland. They've been pretty good for a while. Better in the Big Ten than the ACC because they're kind of the big dog, or they're kind of a baseball school in the Big Ten, whereas in the ACC, they had to compete with everybody else, and they're far north. But what he's done in Alabama has been impressive. If you look at their roster, a lot of good young talent. Alabama has not been the best baseball program in the league.
They've been one of the worst.
Struggled at times. Yeah. I don't know that they – I mean, I know they support it, but I don't know on campus because, I mean, their basketball program is great. Football is obviously king. Their softball program is elite. Alabama's, baseball, where does that rank? I don't know, I think he's done a fantastic job there. And so that would be one of those guys. Plus, he's only 38 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. And to put it in perspective, I mean, Alabama has been, like I always say, there's Missouri, and then there's the other 15 programs in the SEC. You can make the argument that Alabama, of those 15, has been the most underachieving for quite some time, but for the better part of a quarter century. And he comes in. This is going to be his third NCAA tournament in 3 years. And everything about him is impressive. And he's another classic case of, he's born in Corpus Christi, Texas. He played at Kansas State. He had no ties whatsoever at Alabama. And he's clearly been a home run hire. Really been. Yeah. Now, Alabama hadn't been to Omaha since 99, which is staggering. If and when he gets them there, he can name his price. Even though Alabama baseball never draws like Carolina when it's good, it's not, just doesn't resonate to the level that it does some of the other programs like Columbia, Baton Rouge, and whatnot. I understand there's plenty of empty seats the last 2 years. It's not a fair assessment. When the team's got awful, no one's selling out stadiums. That's just the nature of the beast. I heard a great interview with Wes Johnson yesterday. Wes Johnson has, speaking of underachieving programs, he takes over the Georgia job. What do they do? Year one, super regional. Year two, regional. Year three, SEC championship. Where's Wes Johnson from? Well, he's got to be from Georgia. You can't recruit and get players and run a program unless you know the fabric and the culture of Georgia baseball. No. He's born in Arkansas, played in Arkansas, some small school I never heard of. Was an assistant coach at an Arkansas high school. Then was a pitching coach at Central Arkansas, Southern Arkansas, back to Central Arkansas, goes to Dallas Baptist for 4 years, then gets a taste of the SEC, 1 year at Mississippi State, 2 years at, guess what, Arkansas. And then he takes a pitching coach job with the Minnesota Twins.
Yeah, dude. He was like the Leo Mazzoni of the Minnesota Twins.
Right? Right? And then they get him. And then Georgia gets him. And when that hire was made, I doubt that the what's the on-3 site, JC, for Georgia Bulldogs?
You got two of them, Dogs HQ and UGASports.com.
Okay, I'm going to take a wild guess that Dogs HQ and what was the other one?
UGASports.com.
UGASports.com. I'm going to take a wild guess and say they weren't doing cartwheels over the Wes Johnson hire, okay? Mm-hmm. They might not have said it sucks, but they weren't doing cartwheels because that's not a massive name. And again, no ties to the area.
I mean, yeah. And Carolina's probably not hiring an assistant. I mean, just,
I don't think so either.
That's,
I don't
true,
think so either.
But I mean, it's,
I mean, the Monty, can we just get this over with? The chances of Monty Lee getting the job are minuscule. If Monty Lee went say 500, you might have a case. He went 10-24 and lost 13 in a row. It's like, that is not, I don't think that is truly on the radar. You tell me if it's different. I mean, I know. Go ahead.
I think I'll say this. The interim head coach normally does get an interview. Mike,
of course, and he deserves that. Football. Yeah.
You know, we'll see what happens. But what I've been told is, number one, you know, there are names, at least one, probably two, that the job's probably not getting passed. And if it does, it's not automatic, you know, unless things change. You know, sometimes you'll have an interview. Sometimes the interviews don't matter, just to be honest. Not every AD goes and interviews six people and picks the best interview. Right. In fact, I've seen it work out better when you just treat it like recruiting and say, this is number one, this is number two. And if the interview goes wrong and you're uncomfortable, that's okay. You go to the next guy on your board. Mm-hmm. But you're not going, everybody's even and's got a fair chance, let's go interview, because an interview could be misleading. Correct. I've seen bad coaches hired because they had the best interview or whatever. You got to look at track record. And if you're going to hire a head coach, there's a track record to look at, right?
And sometimes interviews are a formality, right? Like, did you really think Willie Taggart had a chance of getting the Gamecock football job because he took an interview?
Lord, I hope not.
No, that was never going to happen. That was a formality. Of course, and Monty deserves that. And look, I root for Monty Lee and I root for Landon Powell. I'd love to see Landon Powell in the Gamecock dugout, you know. But again, I try to look at this realistically. And from what I have been told, that's not on the radar, so to speak. There's a lot of rungs on that ladder before you get to that point.
I think that's true. Now Landon is, you know, so Monty to me would not be in the assistant coach category, and there's a reason I'm kind of getting to this, the assistant coach thing, to circle back to that, because he's been a head coach, he's the interim head coach. Landon Powell is a head coach. After what Ben McCollum did in basketball at Iowa this year, I will never like say a D2 guy can't do it. I mean, and if anybody can do it, it's Landon. But you have to understand, there's a new AD. This is his first major hire.
Exactly.
I don't want to say pressure. There's an expectation and a curiosity as to what he will do. Mm-hmm. And the hope is this fan base and supporters and stakeholders and people that are making the decisions, they would like something to get excited about, you know, and that's not Monty Lee's fault, but these things sometimes are political. They blow with the wind, you know, and sometimes they work out and sometimes they don't. So all that said, you look at Wes Johnson and you mentioned him too. And this is why I wish they hadn't, they weren't so like no assistants. Because the guy there, Will Coggin, who's his hitting coach and his recruiting guy. Now, Wes mm-hmm. Johnson's a pitching coach, but how has Georgia been winning? Been knocking the cover off.
Oh, blasting. Well, they had the stud, who was a walk-on, by the way.
Yeah, Condon. Or was it Condon? That was Condon. His name.
Yeah, he was a walk-on that they inherited. I mean, that was flukish. Carolina hasn't had that kind of luck in a long, long time.
Yeah, all right. So when before Will Coggin was at Georgia, guess where he was? It's at Kentucky mm-hmm. with Nick Mangione. What did Kentucky do when he was there? They went to Omaha.
Yeah.
Dude, next to Missouri, if you want to know, Kentucky may be 14th, 15th in the league.
100%. That's why I can't sit here and tell you that Mangione's different. He's weird. People hate him. Okay. He's gone to a super regional in Omaha during his time at Kentucky. Like, yeah. That's the kind of results I think Carolina fans would love to see out of the next hire.
But not since this guy left and went to Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia won this. So he's the assistant, and he's got some ties to South Carolina, because so, I think his fiance works at Georgia and is a South Carolina graduate. Early on, he was a name that was passed along to me as a candidate mm-hmm. by someone out of the USC. So you look at that, and you look at the success Tony Vitello had at Tennessee as coming from assistant in Arkansas. We mentioned Mangione. He was an assistant at Mississippi State. Even going back to Tim Corbin and Kevin O'Sullivan, they were assistants at Clemson before they built monsters.
That's right.
At these places. Butch Thompson was a head coach at like Dixie State or somewhere. But where did he come to Auburn from? He came from Mississippi State.
Yeah, longtime assistant in the league. Yeah.
Yeah. Elander is an assistant promoted from within. Michael Early at A&M is assistant promoted from within. Skip Johnson in Oklahoma was an internal promotion. He was at Oklahoma for 1 year as the pitching coach. But before that, he was at Texas for 7 as an assistant pitching. So there's all these examples around the league of it working. Now there's also Dave Van Horn. Mike, you covered the Gamecocks in 2002. One of the most pressure-filled, glorifying moments in Gamecock baseball history was when Jerome Peters hit a 3-run homer in the ninth with a backdrop of a sea of red in Omaha, Nebraska, to knock the Huskers out. Who was the coach there then? Dave Van Horn. So they hired him from there. You know, Mike Bianco was at McNeese State. Before that, he was an LSU assistant. You know, you mentioned that. We mentioned Rob Baum from Alabama. He was the head coach at Maryland. So it's not universal.
Right.
But I just think in the sport of baseball, it may be a little different than some of the other sports. Some of these assistants actually end up, you know, working out.
Yeah.
But not only worked out, but revolutionized programs. Where was Tennessee mm-hmm. baseball before Vitello? Where was Kentucky before Mangione? Where was Georgia before Wes Johnson?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I don't want to say it's a mistake, but, you know, I think the assistant coaching pool is actually a little bit more intriguing to me as someone that's not a baseball guy, as far as
impact these guys have had on different programs than maybe the head coaching pool.
I've heard you made this point before, and I think it's 100% spot on. I don't think it has to be a sitting head coach. Winning the press conference means nothing, right? Winning, and I believe if it's one of the main guys mentioned, I think most of the fans are going to be very happy with that. I think they're going to look at the track record and they're going to see and they're going to say establish it. What happened with Chad Holbrook when that didn't work out by various standards, it was just kind of known, like, you're not hiring another assistant. You're not doing that. And so you went back to back established head coaches, one in the case of Kingston where you really thought you might have Sully. And then the other one, we don't have enough time to talk about what went into that. But now I just think Carolina fans would just be happy with somebody who can get this thing cranked up again. You don't know until you know. You don't know until he's been here a couple of years to kind of get a feel for what direction it's going. Mm-hmm. You didn't know that under Mark Kingston. You didn't know that under Chad. You know, you just kind of play out over 6-7 years, right? I mean,
Chad Holbrook and Mark Kingston's first years were better than Ray Tanner's.
Well, yeah, and of course they inherited the roster. Yeah, whoever gets this job, I'm not sure what they're going to inherit. But again, the difference is, and this is my point Tuesday we were all together, is that this is not a 5-year rebuild. That doesn't exist anymore with the portal. And I'm not saying you want to go 100% portal, and everybody knows you want to dominate in-state recruiting. That's the of course you want that. But if you're going to be a national power, you need more than that. You can't just dominate your state. You got to do what all these other programs are doing, which is do good in-state and also pluck elite talent across the country. There's no reason why Carolina can't do that.
And look, the portal, man, baseball's just like every other sport. One of Texas's best hitters this year was a portal guy. Texas, this University of Texas, came from Seton Hall. He's a New Jersey kid, whole career in New Jersey.
Yeah,
all of a sudden caught fire last year for the mighty Pirates of PJ Carlissimo. It's a nice reference back in the day.
Terry DeHare was Terry DeHare is hitting.
They brought my man down to Austin, Texas. He's ripping the cover off the ball from Longhorns. Mm-hmm. I mean, I still think, just like the basketball conversation, you have to be able at South Carolina, unless you're Dawn Staley or unless you were Frank McGuire back in the 70s, that you got all those guys from New York City, different era of basketball, obviously. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to find players. The Final Four team that Frank Martin coached had two studs from South Carolina. You know, most of the NCAA tournament teams around here since the McGuire era have had good South Carolina kids only. Mm-hmm. But guess who the other starters were from? Canada, Ghana, and Estonia.
Right. And you mentioned Canada would notice some of those guys off the bench were.
Yeah, exactly. Sadiq Keita was from Gambia or someplace.
Something like that.
Gabon. Was Silva from Gabon? He was from Gabon, I think. But I mean, those guys, they're international guys. Guys from South Carolina.
Well, you go back to Eddie's two teams. Ryan Stack was from Tennessee.
Yeah.
You know, obviously you had, and back then Eddie was, he was on lockdown. If you were a premier player in the state, you either went to the NBA like Garnett or O'Neal, or there's a damn good chance Eddie got you. That, of course, faded with time and everybody.
And then the state stopped having players for a while.
Right. And then when you did have an elite guy, it was like Raymond Felton, who grew up a Tar Heel fan. Like, okay, what are you going to do? If they couldn't get Zion because Zion wanted to go to a blue blood, so he goes to Duke. If Frank gets Zion, who knows? And they did everything they could to get him, believe me.
They actually made it interesting. I'll say this, just to wrap up here, because I know we got to go, Phil. In baseball, there's 35 roster spots. You can recruit 4 or 5 of the studs in state every single year. and you still got 31 left. I mean, you can do both. You know, I don't think you can get real portal heavy and expect to win every year, because eventually you're going to get a bad batch. And mm-hmm. we can see at Vanderbilt and LSU this year that sometimes it just doesn't work. I'm not saying that it was the portal was why they lost, but sometimes it just doesn't work out.
That's right.
You know, but I think whoever comes in here needs to be someone that is adept at finding talent. And just about everybody on the list fits that bill. I mean, Dan yeah. Fitzgerald from Kansas, you look at his lineup, they're from places like LSU, Eunice, and Shamrock State. And I mean, yeah. Doohickey College of Mines, you know, and places mm-hmm. like that. They won the Big 12. And
sure.
the Big 12, yeah, that's Arizona, Arizona State, pretty good programs, Oklahoma State, TCU. Those are pretty good baseball programs.
No doubt.
Know? I mean, same – Kevin Schnall has put a roster together at Coastal that's competitive nationally. So
right. And you know they're not getting the top Carolina kids every year.
And then when we talked about, like – and look, I'm not saying – Mike and I aren't saying Rob Vaughn's a candidate. Please don't take that the wrong way.
That's true. I guess
I do think someone that. Like a Rob Vaughn could enter the chat at some point. But a guy like Rob Vaughn, obviously, has he turned it in Alabama? Recruiting. And I tell you, they're having enough problems with basketball and football. I think he's got a decent NIL budget there. I don't think it's anything to write home about.
No, it's not Carolina-like. Now, if he goes,
players, you know.
If he goes to Omaha, he can reset all those numbers because he'll have leverage. But I'm not saying this is going to happen. I'm glad you clarified that, because I know how people can take some of that and run with it. If I'm Jeremiah Donati and I've got my army of people going after this, and I got, you know, my consulting firm giving me a list of top candidates, I make a phone call. What's the worst thing I can do? Say no, right? Take your shot. Hey, how happy are you in Tuscaloosa? You haven't been to Omaha there since 99. You know, we're falling on some tough times, but we have been six times since 2000 and two national championships. And when the program's good, can get 7,000 to 8,000 people to come to your games. Just saying, we got some money to deal with. What you want to break bread? Let's go to a steakhouse not named Halls.
I'll tell you, yeah, it's too public. Halls has become like the places like the celebrities hang out with.
Yes, it's got to be another steakhouse that's worth a crap in Columbia, right? Yeah. Have they not built one yet?
Not as good as Halls, I don't think, but there's some good ones. All right, so the one more final thing.
Greenville, if you want to eat at Halls, because there's one up here now, too.
So. There's too much glass. You can see who's eating in there from the street. And that's
right, yes.
Yes.
One of our friends, my man's 49 years old. A couple of years ago, he had some trouble with the ladies, and he met this girl he liked, and he was going to ask a girl, keep in mind he's 49 years old, to be his girlfriend. And he rented a carriage in downtown Greenville, like on a horse, to do this, like a proposal. Did you feed him
beef Reno?
What is this, like, sexual
torture? Yeah. And I think, and so I think about that every time I think about downtown Greenville at Halls. He's riding by, and you're like, oh, look. There's something going on in that carriage. There's like,
did he get her? Where?
She's shaking her head no. What?
He got turned down?
Yes.
Oh, gosh. A painful story.
Should have had a check yes or no note.
Yeah, I'd have gone with that. Check one, yes, no, or maybe. But all right, one more thing. Mike Morrison, who Jamie mentioned earlier, who's the recruiting coordinator at Alabama, not only pitched at Coastal Carolina on the national championship team, he is a native of Gilbert, South Carolina. Grew up in Gilbert.
There you go. Okay, there you go.
So that's kind of an assistant coach name to watch in a few scenarios with Carolina.
Okay.
And he's obviously involved in recruiting these guys. Alabama staff's good. A young, energetic staff over there. I like it. You know, Coach Tanner was in his 30s when he took the job at South Carolina. Remember?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, it's a weird time because Carolina down, LSU, it's a 1 year down, but down. Tennessee down, Vanderbilt trending down. These are programs that were winning national titles not long ago. So maybe it's just a cyclical thing where all of a sudden Georgia's really good and Bama's relevant. And who knows?
How about Florida wins it all this year? Seriously, I mean, because everybody all year talked about how Florida was kind of down, you know, and they had a bad series in Arkansas, I think, or something.
But it was a bunch of midweek games. Like they could lose to a team of Cub Scouts on a Tuesday night.
And then, but they have pitching, and they're just the type of team that will get hot at the right time and win it all. They have enough talent too.
And if you had $10 for every time, I hear Sully's out of there. I mean, that's been going on for 10 years. Just stop it. I'll believe it when I see it.
He's supposed to take 3 other jobs. The off-the-field stuff was supposed to get him. He got suspended this past year, and everybody's like, well, that's probably it.
That's it, right.
Yep. Yeah. Fired. He's quitting. He's leaving. He's, you know.
Oh, man.
Slime coach.
Stop. If Kevin O'Sullivan had a tail, I don't think anybody'd even, like, think anything was there. Like a gator tail. You know, he kind of just sits over there and lurks.
You could eat those in Louisiana.
If he put a scrawl in his mouth and he just turned around and Kevin Sully had a tail, nobody would even notice.
We're getting into a weird area.
Yeah, me too. Let's go.
All right. Enjoy it, guys.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Phil. We'll be back tomorrow with Fantastic Friday on ITG. See you later.